pivotal election in Turkey Sunday that could usher in a new government for the first time in decades.
Voters here came out in droves to Turkey's elections, with many people saying the ballot is crucial.
Plus, fighting escalates in Sudan's capital with growing concerns that the conflict will spread to neighboring countries.
So this is a hugely vulnerable region. The outflow of people is just one aspect of really a destabilizing situation for the whole region that Sudan is in some ways in the middle of. So we're very worried.
And a show of solidarity for Ukraine during a popular singing contest held in Liverpool. Today is Monday, May 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made a surprise visit to Paris for talks on Sunday night with French President Emmanuel Macron. He's extending a multi-stop European tour that has elicited fresh pledges of military support as Ukraine gears up for a counteroffensive against Russian occupation forces. France dispatched a plane to pick up Zelensky in Germany, where he met earlier in the day with Chancellor Olaf Scholz. As VOA's Arash Arbasadi tells us, the support comes as Russian forces continue attacking mostly civilian targets in Ukraine.
A warehouse engulfed in flames after Russian bombs rained down overnight Saturday in the Ukrainian city of Chernobyl. The attack came on the evening of the popular Eurovision Song Contest in the home city of Ukraine's contestants in this year's show. Ukraine had widely received public support to host the competition, but due to the war, the show took place in Britain. The attack underscores Ukraine's plight for additional and advanced weapons capabilities, a call answered over the weekend by Germany. Sunday in Berlin, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz welcomed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky with military honors in Zelensky's first visit since the start of the war. The meeting follows Germany's announcement Saturday of a new package of military aid nearly matching all previous aid to date. The German government pledged nearly $3 billion of new support, including anti-aircraft systems, ammunition, and its sought-after Leopard tanks. At a joint news conference in Berlin, Scholz said Germany would support Ukraine as long as necessary.
Wir sehen all die schrecklichen Berichte und deswegen ist klar.
Those responsible for this terrible war of aggression must be held accountable. No state in the world may invade another country. No one may murder, plunder, or kidnap children. That is why we are working together with our partners so that Russia is held accountable.
But it was Russian President Vladimir Putin spinning an alternate reality earlier this week at his country's Victory Day celebration commemorating the defeat of Nazi Germany. Putin railed against Western globalist elites, whom he said were dividing society, provoking bloody conflicts and coups, and destroying the traditional family values that make people human. And yet, just days later, it was Putin's forces destroying family dwellings in another attack on civilian targets of private homes and apartment blocks. Back in Berlin, Scholz and Zelensky flew from the German Chancellery on their way to Aachen, where Zelensky received the prestigious Charlemagne Prize honoring service for European unification. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News.
Voter support for Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has dipped below the majority required to win re-election outright. The latest numbers mean a runoff presidential election in 2 weeks is more than likely. Election day comes as many in the southeast part of the country lost their homes, valuables, and loved ones in February's earthquakes. Still, they came out to vote Sunday in what analysts say could be the country's most pivotal elections in decades. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports on the scene.
It's hard to overstate the suffering the people in southeastern Turkey have experienced in the past 3 months after earthquakes killed more than 50,000 people in what was the worst natural disaster in this region in 100 years.
But voters here came out in droves to Turkey's elections, with many people saying the ballot is crucial, often for different reasons. Some say they are confident their ruling party will stay in power, despite recent economic crises and criticism of the earthquake response. Others hope these elections will usher in a new government for the first time in decades. in areas hardest hit by the earthquakes, people vote in emergency structures known as containers that now house schools and many of the people who lost their homes. Displaced families are also living in tents with no knowledge of when or if their homes will be repaired. At this polling station, opinions are divided, with voters arguing passionately for the ruling party and for opposition parties.
And some voters have told us it's hard to concentrate on elections right now because all they can see is darkness. Reporting from the Gaziantep region of Turkey, Heather Murdoch, VOA News.
Thailand's political opposition looked on course for a huge win in Sunday's general election as voters turned out in force behind two parties promising big changes and an end to a decade of conservative government led or backed by the military. As correspondent Tommy Walker reports for VOA from Bangkok, millions cast their votes on who should lead the country's government.
Now, despite the sweltering heat, the voting process has seemed a smooth one. People will show their identification cards at the polling stations before voting from two ballots, one from their local constituency MPs, another for their favourite party. Speaking with voters of all ages, the overwhelming answer has been is that they want change. Whether it's from to rely less on a military-backed government or for changes in the economy and the social outlook, people want to have more of a say in what happens in their everyday lives. This is Tommy Walker reporting for VOA News in Bangkok, Thailand.
Shelling and airstrikes pounded parts of Sudan's capital on Sunday with little sign that warring military factions were ready to back down in a month-long conflict that has killed hundreds despite ceasefire talks in Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, at Chad's border with Sudan, Sudanese security forces tell VOA they fled their country because they have neither supplies nor ammunition to fight the paramilitary rapid support forces. As the rule of law breaks down in Sudan's Darfur region, analysts and aid groups say risk of the conflict spreading to neighboring countries is high. Henry Wilkins reports from Kafrun, Chad.
Refugees fleeing insecurity in Sudan's western Darfur wade across the river separating the country from its neighbor, Chad. Among those who have arrived here in Kafrun are members of the Sudanese security forces who say they've fled their country because they do not have enough supplies or ammunition to fight the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, which they say carried out a deadly attack on their town of Tendete, just across the border. VOA has withheld the policeman's name to protect his safety. He says he decided to flee Sudan in April.
What happened is really intense and is impossible to describe. A policeman was killed and the state itself did not have the capacity to react. Other policemen also came across with me in the car and he told other people to get out of Tendelte to Kofrun. Any policeman who met a criminal could not do anything to stop him. He cannot punish or arrest him.
VOA spoke to another Sudanese policeman as well as refugee and host community leaders who confirmed 10 or 11 cars full of fleeing Sudanese security forces had crossed the border in the past 3 weeks. Refugees told VOA that insecurity and lawlessness have rocketed in Darfur since the country's civil war started in mid-April. Aid groups say they fear the instability could spread to Chad and other neighbouring countries. Bakary El-Medni, a Sudan expert at Long Island University, describes how a Sudanese government breakdown could affect the region.
I think we're talking about a space of probably half of Europe and with 500 million people or more. That could be open to all kinds of lawlessness and activity of terrorism and all kinds of things.
He points out that the RSF is already aligned with rebel groups in Chad and the Central African Republic, and that the instability is fertile ground for terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic State to take root, as in other Sahel countries. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kafrun, Chad.
The threat of the United States defaulting on its obligations looms over the upcoming G7 summit in Japan that President Biden is scheduled to attend before continuing to a summit with the so-called Quad leaders in Australia and one with Pacific Island leaders in Papua New Guinea. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has the story.
The impasse between House Republicans and President Joe Biden over the nation's debt ceiling, the legal limit the U.S. government can borrow to pay its bills, is a gift to America's adversaries, said Office of Management and Budget Director Shalanda Young.
They love this. They love to see chaos in the American system. They love to see that we can't do our basic jobs. It's no less than a test of what works in this world. Does democracy still work? Or does the Chinese way work?
The U.S. defaulting on its debts would send shockwaves across global finance. Adversaries, including Russia and China, could capitalize on it through a disinformation campaign spread over social media, government media, and other platforms, said Todd Helmes, a senior behavioral scientist at RAND Corporation and a disinformation expert via Zoom.
Russia and China both tout the failures of American democracy in an attempt to argue that their system of government is better than ours. This will certainly play into that. They oftentimes, when they disseminate this content, sort of disseminate it across multiple channels in at least a semi-coordinated way, and I would expect them to play up this fact on all of them.
Lifting the debt ceiling was once a routine vote. Congress has raised it 78 times since 1960, 49 times under Republican presidents and 29 under Democratic presidents. But in recent years, the vote has become increasingly partisan, leading to intense showdowns in 2011 and 2013. Then President Barack Obama.
If Congress doesn't pass this debt ceiling in the next few weeks, the United States will default on its obligations. That's never happened in American history.
House Republicans insist that federal spending must be cut before they will agree to raising the debt ceiling. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
The House Republicans just passed the only bill in Washington that lifts the debt limit, ends wasteful Washington spending, and puts America back on the right economic path.
President Joe Biden says he will not negotiate on this issue.
The two are totally unrelated. Whether you pay the debt or not doesn't have a damn thing to do with what your budget is.
A meeting at the White House with congressional leaders of both parties is set for Tuesday. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Palestinian militants fired a rocket into southern Israel on Sunday, less than 24 hours after a ceasefire was declared, ending a five-day clash that killed 33 Palestinians and two people in southern Israel. There was no claim of responsibility and no immediate Israeli response. Powerful cyclone Moka made landfall Sunday afternoon in Myanmar's Rakhine State with winds of up to 209 kilometers per hour, tearing roofs off buildings and killing at least three people. The storm, one of the strongest to hit the region in recent years, largely spared the densely populated refugee camps in neighboring Bangladesh. The death toll linked to a doomsday cult in Kenya has risen to 201 after police exhumed 22 more bodies on Saturday. More than 600 people are still missing. The bodies are believed to be followers of a pastor alleged to have ordered congregants to starve to death in order to meet Jesus. That pastor remains in custody. This is VOA News. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Despite the drop in recent days, authorities are predicting arrests of migrants illegally crossing the U.S. southern border with Mexico will spike to between 12 and 14,000 a day in the coming weeks. U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas denied the U.S. has imposed a ban on asylum seekers, but he also emphasized that there is a lawful and orderly way to reach the U.S. VOA's Veronica Baldiris Iglesias has details.
The U.S. Customs and Border Patrol has seen an almost 50% drop in migrants encountered at the southern border in the past couple of days. That's compared to numbers seen right before the pandemic-era policy known as Title 42 came to an end Thursday, said the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, during an interview with ABC's This Week.
We've already removed thousands of people who have arrived at our southern border. We are enforcing our traditional immigration enforcement authorities under Title 8 of the United States Code.
Mayorkas emphasized that the expansion of lawful pathways under President Joe Biden is unprecedented. He also rejected claims there's a ban on asylum seekers.
What our rule provides is that an individual must access those lawful pathways that we have made available to them. If they have not, then they must have sought relief in one of the countries through which they have traveled and been denied. And if they haven't done either, it's not a ban on asylum, but they have a higher threshold of proof that they have to meet.
Whether the new policies will discourage illegal entries into the United States is something that Republican Representative Michael McCaul told ABC he's skeptical about.
I do think there are caravans going up. I think they still want to get in. My governor, my home state, has put Texas National Guard and DHS CBP troops on the border to stop the influx. But, you know, the fact is the last 2.5 years speak for themselves. We've had 5 million people enter this country illegally, 1.5 getaways. It's unsustainable.
Migrants are often forced to flee after facing horrific crimes in their home countries, argues law professor Blaine Bookie.
We see just extremely high rates of violence. And that's really why, you know, people are continuing the journey where they can get to a country where they actually find safety and in many instances reunify with family.
There's a good chance that the new legal pathways that the Biden administration is betting on could help deter illegal crossings. But it could also go the other way if the root causes aren't addressed, warned analyst Peter Margulies.
That is the factors in folks' home countries, for example, in Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, that lead people to need to leave. And those include economic factors, climate change, and the threat of violence.
U.S. authorities concede that a surge of undocumented immigrants could still materialize in the coming days, even as 5-year bans and criminal prosecution are now in the cards for those who seek to defy the law. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says America's leading cause of overdose deaths is synthetic opioids, mostly fentanyl, which can be up to 50 times stronger than heroin. Officials say illicit fentanyl is cheaply made from chemicals mostly coming from China, trafficked through Mexico, and then smuggled into the United States. VOA's Natasha Muzgovaya in Seattle looks at fentanyl in the state of Washington in a series of stories that starts with one teenager's overdose.
Lucas Behrer was active in his church youth group. He worked part-time as a swim instructor and played high school football in this quiet community outside Seattle. But when the 16-year-old hurt his back, his mother, Olga Davidov Behrer, says he started taking painkillers. She wasn't overly worried at first, but says she made sure to discuss drug risks after one of Lucas's classmates died of an overdose.
I talked to Lucas after funeral, even though I had no idea that Lucas buy pills, but I talk to him and I say, Lucas, I don't know what it is, because nobody was still saying about fentanyl. People were still saying about pills. It was not clear. But I said, I want to make sure that I'm not mom who loses a child.
1 month later, investigators said Lucas took what he thought was Percocet, a powerful painkiller. It was a counterfeit pill laced with fentanyl. His mother found him unresponsive on the first morning of the new school year.
Then I heard that from his friends, it must be fentanyl. Must be fentanyl. And then I started hearing, I'm like, what is fentanyl?
Pharmaceutical fentanyl is approved for treating severe pain. Illicit fentanyl is often mixed with heroin or cocaine or used in counterfeit pills like the one that killed Lucas. U.S. Drug Enforcement agent Jacob Galvin says lab tests reveal potentially lethal fentanyl doses in 6 out of 10 fake pills.
When we show it to our agents, they can't tell the difference. We show it to our laboratory people, they can't tell the difference. That's how good these things are made.
I honestly can think it can happen to anyone because I think that the profit is huge for fentanyl. And I think that even if fentanyl can be dropped in anything, just everyone needs to be aware that, well, there is things that is sold or distributed on the street.
Since the death in this community, there are new school programs about the dangers of fentanyl and drug kits with naloxone to help staff treat accidental overdoses.
We think the earliest we can get to a school, the better. We would be in grammar schools all the way up to colleges if they would have us, because that's how important it is to get the message out of how deadly these pills are.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says that more than 90% of people 12 and older with a substance abuse disorder receive no treatment. Lucas's family created a volunteer group to spread awareness about fentanyl risks, help families recognize warning signs, and know where to turn for help. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Sammamish, Washington.
Swedish singer Loreen won the Eurovision Song Contest on Saturday night with her power ballad Tattoo at a music competition clouded for a second year by the war in Ukraine. Steve Holden, host of the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast, told the Associated Press that there was solidarity for Ukraine throughout Liverpool, which hosted the event on behalf of last year's winner.
I've never seen a city embrace Eurovision as much as Liverpool. It runs through the whole of the city. Every pub, every shop, every bar has the Ukrainian flag. What is so wonderful about this Eurovision is because the United Kingdom is hosting on behalf of Ukraine, they've really taken that on board, and Ukraine just flows throughout the whole city.
Russia, a longtime Eurovision participant, was kicked out last year over its invasion of Ukraine. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire team at International Edition, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have yourselves a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At its core, the U.S. Republic of Korea alliance is about building a better future for all of our people, said President Joe Biden in a joint press conference with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. There's no better example than our economic relationship and partnership, which is delivering incredible benefits to both our nations, said President Biden.
Through the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, we're advancing economic growth grounded in high standards for our workers, for the environment, and for communities throughout the region. We're standing together against economic influence being leveraged in coercive ways. And since I took office, Korean companies have invested more than $100 billion in the United States, driving innovation and spurring good new jobs for Americans and Korean workers.
Our mutual defense treaty is ironclad, and that includes our commitment to nuclear deterrence, said President Biden.
They're particularly important in the face of DPRK's increased threats and the blatant violation of sanctions. At the same time, we continue to seek serious and substantial diplomatic breakthroughs with the DPRK to bolster stability on the peninsula, reduce the threat of proliferation, and address our humanitarian and human rights concerns for the people of the DPRK.
The Republic of Korea and the United States are working together, including through their trilateral cooperation with Japan, to ensure the future of the Indo-Pacific is free, open, prosperous, and secure. Both leaders also discussed their commitment to peace and stability in the Taiwan Straits, ensuring freedom of navigation in the South China Sea and beyond. President Biden thanked the Republic of Korea for its strong support for Ukraine. The choices we make today, said President Biden, are going to determine the direction of our world and the future of our kids for decades to come. from tracking the climate crisis and strengthening our effort to fight it, and strengthening global health, declared President Biden. No two countries are better suited to meet the challenges ahead than the Republic of Korea and the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.